You're listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service. Welcome to the reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for Sunday, March 10th. Support for this reading comes from the DuPaco R.W. Heffer Foundation. I'm Jackie.
And I'm Barbara.
And here is our first story. Cause for concern. Local public health officials say the number of children not fully vaccinated is small, but growing. Local health officials say a steady rise in exemptions from required childhood vaccinations, coupled with misinformation on their safety, is contributing to a concerning trend of fewer kids getting fully vaccinated. While the state data shows that nearly all local school-age children have received the vaccines required to attend school or licensed childcare centers, the small number with exemptions based on religious and personal conviction objections has been growing steadily for years. Health officials, from the local to the federal level, have made it clear for decades that childhood vaccinations are safe and effective, but some parents remain wary as exemption numbers continue to climb. And health officials say the COVID-19 pandemic only made misinformation about vaccinations more prevalent, further pushing hesitant parents away. Still, the Federal Centers for Disease Control and Prevention notes that vaccines are tested and evaluated rigorously before they are approved for use to ensure that they are made as safe as possible. Vaccines are the best way to protect against serious diseases, the CDC states. Allie White, executive director of the Dubuque County Public Health Department, said, "The upward trend of vaccine exemptions is concerning, though most kids still are getting their shots. From a public health perspective, this increase that we're seeing is definitely a cause for concern," she said. "We're worried about the number of unvaccinated individuals that it continues to trend upward." For the 2023-24 school year, 3% of students in Iowa have religious exemptions. From receiving at least one required vaccination, up from 2.6% in the 22-23 school year and 1.3% in the 15-16 school year, according to the Iowa Department of Health and Human Services. In Dubuque County, 3.1% of students have religious exemptions in the current school year, compared to 3.6% in Clayton County, 2.1% in Delaware County, and 2.8% in Jackson County. That is an increase from the previous year, when the exemption rate was 2.7% in Dubuque County, 3.4% in Clayton County, and 1.5% in Delaware County, though Jackson County saw no change in its rate. In the 21-22 school year, 2.3% of students had religious exemptions in Dubuque County, while the rate was 3.5% in Clayton County, 1.4% in Delaware, and 3% in Jackson. Hannah Porsick, lead nurse for Dubuque Community Schools, said, "The district hasn't seen an increase that would rise to a concerning level. District data shows that the percentage of students with religious exemptions increased from 2.03% in 18-19 school year to 3.12% in the current school year. A lot of times, it's just helping educate them on the law requirements and guiding them to resources, Porcik said. I think parents just make the best choice that they feel is best for their family, and sometimes that's a medical or religious exemption. Porcik said district nurses work with families to answer questions about vaccinations, help them understand their options, and learn what is required by state law. Whether families need access to insurance, providers, or exemption forms, nurses provide them with the information they need. Laura Ryan, Western Dubuque Community School District lead nurse, wrote in an email to the TH that the district hasn't seen a noticeable increase in vaccine exemptions during the past few years. However, she said, the district may see more of the effects of vaccine hesitancy as babies from both COVID-19 pandemic start to enter school. Parents in Iowa and Illinois can pursue vaccine exemptions on either religious or medical grounds. In both states, the medical exemption form requires a healthcare provider's signature attesting that the relevant vaccines would harm the health of the child. In Illinois, the religious exemption form requires a healthcare provider's signature and requires parents to disclose which vaccines they want their child to be exempt from and the religious grounds for a request. Iowa's religious exemption form only requires a notary and parent signature, agreeing that the immunization conflicts with a genuine and sincere religious belief, and that the belief is in fact religious and not based merely on philosophical, scientific, moral, personal, or medical opposition to immunizations. In addition to medical and religious exemption options, parents in Wisconsin also can receive a waiver from vaccine requirements based on personal conviction. White, who worked as a school nurse before taking on her current role, said in her experience, most families who pursue a religious exemption actually just have a personal preference. She also said some parents might pursue an exemption because it is difficult for them to get transportation to vaccine appointments. Unfortunately, sometimes it's easier for a parent or caregiver to get an exemption form signed and notarized than it is to actually get them to receive the vaccine, she said. Sometimes I do believe that to be a barrier as well. Mary Rose Corrigan, City of Dubuque Public Health Director, said that decades ago parents had to cite a religion and the specific doctrine in that religion informing their beliefs against vaccinations, though that no longer is the case. A person doesn't really have to be following a specific religion in order to have a religious exemption, she said. It's more of a philosophical viewpoint in some cases. For the 22-23 school year, 3% of students in southwestern Wisconsin School District had a personal conviction waiver. Cuba City School District also had a 3% waiver rate. Platteville School District had 8%. Potosi School District had 6%. Lancaster Community School District had 5%. Darlington Community School District had 4%. And Benton School District had 4%. Jeff Kindra, director of the Grant County Health Department said, the county did see a drop in the number of children ages 2 and younger who are up to date of their required vaccinations during the pandemic, though the numbers have gone back up to 57% in 23. However, he said it isn't uncommon for surrounding counties to have immunization numbers much higher than that. Since the pandemic, we have not gone in the direction we've wanted to see, he said. Kindre said that trend is concerning because some vaccine preventable diseases are extremely contagious, making the area more susceptible to an outbreak if vaccination levels are lower. Most vaccine hesitancy is based on misinformation, he said, so the department works to get accurate information and opportunities to people who need them.
Ex-Dubuque's claim to abuse settlement limited by Iowa law. State's statute of limitations on civil cases could hamper efforts to benefit from a trust for sex abuse victims of Boy Scouts of America. The wooded area behind what is now Mercy One Dubuque Medical Center was once a stomping ground for the youngsters who grew up in the neighborhood. Bill Val remembers gallivanting along the bluffs, bumming cigarettes, and playing with friends as any kid growing up in the early 1960s would. Life was fun. We just had good times, said Val, now 71. Dubuque was a great place to grow up. That love for the outdoors and camaraderie led Val to join local Boy Scout Troop 23 of the Northeast Iowa Council in 1964. Val excelled. He became a lead scout and took on various leadership roles in meetings. While in many ways he thrived as a scout, Val also is one of at least 82,000 people in the U.S. who say they once were sexually abused by a scout volunteer. It's that alleged abuse that Val said led to nearly 60 years of crippling fatigue and health problems that hindered his ability to work and led him to seriously consider ending his life. Val, in 2020, joined a national settlement in hopes of recouping a fraction of his lost wages while also being part of a movement to push for change in the justice system regarding organizational protection of children. I have essentially lost my life, Val told the Telegraph Herald in an interview. Val, who now lives in Tucson, Arizona, is working on submitting a packet that documents his story as a Boy Scout of America trust valued at nearly $2.5 billion. The trust is a product of a federal Boy Scouts of America bankruptcy case and is being dispersed to former Boy Scouts with sexual abuse claims as part of the largest civil sexual abuse settlement in U.S. history. However, legal hurdles, which include Iowa's stringent statute of limitations on civil cases involving sexual abuse victims, have Val and many others questioning how much money they ultimately will receive. I was unaware I was being groomed. Val became a Boy Scout with Troop 23 in 1964 when he was 11 years old. Val said an assistant scoutmaster, Kenny Krakow, took a liking to several of the boys in the troop and would take them to events outside the normal scouting schedule. It was common for Val and a couple other youths to accompany Krakow to events such as dirt track races, canoe trips, and air shows, Val said. During these prolonged activities, Krakow eventually gained the young Val's trust, enough to persuade him to visit his house, Val said. At the time, I was unaware I was being groomed, Val said. All these activities were designed to make me feel greatly indebted to him. I loved the attention, and we had a lot of fun. Val said Krakow sexually abused him more than a dozen times over several years. The alleged abuse was not talked about among the other boys or with troop leadership, Val said. Kids at the time were told not to question authority. Val said the alleged abuse went unreported until someone eventually turned in the scoutmaster. It wasn't my parents who did it, said Val, who didn't report the alleged abuse to his parents. I didn't turn Krakow in, so I know for a fact there was at least one more victim. A confidential record sheet from the Boy Scouts of America, dated December 8, 1970, details the resignation of Kenneth Krakow of Dubuque in 1970. The document was among the more than 20,000 pages of internal Boy Scouts of America documents dubbed the Perversion Files, dating back to 1944, that were presented to an Oregon jury in 2010 for the first time. The documents detailed alleged sexual abuse by Boy Scouts of America leaders. The document with Krakow's name said he resigned due to, quote, many years of homosexual activities with boys in the area, unquote, and was signed by a Boy Scout executive. By the time he turned 15, Val said he told Krakow he wanted the encounters to stop. Krakow did not protest that decision, Val said. Since Val's alleged abuse, Boy Scouts of America has implemented a number of protocols meant to better vet individuals put in leadership positions. The Boy Scouts of America has established a National Youth Protection Committee to guide scouting on matters of youth protection policy, transparency, and accountability, Boy Scouts of America told the Telegraph Herald in an emailed statement. We have an extremely rigorous vetting process, said Carl Bobus, CEO of the Northeast Iowa Council of Boy Scouts of America, which includes Alan McKee, Clayton, Delaware, and Dubuque counties in Iowa, and Joe Davies County in Illinois. Some of the new protocols called barriers to abuse include no one-on-one contact between scouts and adults and require a minimum of 2 trained leaders at every scouting function. We take the safety of the youth extremely seriously, and I applaud our national office for doing things right by the victims, Bobus said. We believe them and feel their pain for their suffering. Val said he eventually separated the abuse from the rest of his time as a scout, which he viewed positively. I have fond memories of the Boy Scouts, Val said. In my mind, I was able to separate what happened to me from all the good times. I had fun, aside from Kenny Krakow. Krakow died in 1980. A lifetime of health troubles. Val said after the abuse ended, he started suffering from health issues. From age 15 to 24, Val said he lived an almost normal life, but in the years that followed, his health deteriorated. At age 24, I became severely sick, which hugely compromised my lifestyle and ability to work, and this lasted until I was about 69 years old, Val said. Multiple doctor visits resulted in unsuccessful treatments, including one health professional who suggested Val essentially be on nonstop bed rest. Nothing worked. Val said he felt like he had the flu every day. Doctors for years had no answer to what was causing his symptoms. Val said for a long time he didn't connect the severe fatigue and health struggles to the traumatic experience of his youth, and so didn't think it was relevant to mention to doctors. Then, in 2023, a psychiatrist told Val his childhood abuse might be the root cause of his health issues and diagnosed him with a somatoform disorder, according to the psychiatrist's report, which Val provided to the Telegraph Herald. In people with somatoform disorders, the cause is thought to be intolerable psychological conflicts that are displaced into physical complaints, the report said. For some people, trying to wrestle with physical symptoms is a much safer way to address these psychological conflicts than trying to directly confront the conflicts. In recent years, and after a heart attack, Val has found some healing by doing various exercise routines and hiking the mountain trails around Tucson. As Val works to overcome his health complications, he is fighting another battle. Val, an engineer, estimates over his lifetime he lost nearly $2 million in wages due to his health issues that limited his ability to work. In an effort to recoup some of that money, Val decided to become part of the Boy Scouts of America settlement. Val said he hopes the settlement also will lead to even more protection for kids involved in the Boy Scouts and other organizations. Val is working with Iowa legislators in an effort to recraft Iowa's statute of limitations for civil cases. As they are written now, they could severely limit the amount of compensation Val and other claimants in the state will receive. Statutes of limitation exist in part to protect evidence and ensure involved parties reach a resolution in a timely manner, while also making sure those accused of wrongdoing can form a defense. When figuring survivors' compensation, the current Boy Scouts of America settlement uses a formula that weighs a variety of factors, such as the level of abuse, whether the victim previously knew their alleged abuser, and state's statutes of limitations regarding civil abuse claims. Since Val's alleged abuse took place in Iowa, his claim is subject to the state's laws. Iowa's civil statute of limitations requires childhood survivors of wrongdoing, sex abuse or otherwise, to file a claim in court by the age of 19. However, the statute does allow claimants to join suits such as the one for Boy Scouts of America within 3 years of coming to the realization that their injuries and suffering are related to their alleged abuse. Janet Peterson of Des Moines this year proposed Senate File 2233, a bill that seeks to eliminate the civil statute of limitations for those filing claims for damages suffered from sex abuse, sexual exploitation, and sex trafficking. For the Boy Scouts of America settlement, the bill must pass 1 year after the effective date of the trust, or by April 2024. As of now, there is little movement in Des Moines, and the bill did not receive a hearing with a Senate subcommittee. There is still an opportunity to get legislation passed, which would require a leadership bill, Peterson said. The legislature has done that in the past. I have agreement from Democrat leaders who would be supportive of a leadership bill to eliminate the civil statute of limitations, even if they wanted to narrow the fix to just cases involving bankruptcy. I imagine leadership would be open to that. Peterson said lifting the law would allow more people to come forward and report abuse, while also holding large organizations accountable. Opponents of such measures say getting rid of statutes of limitations can create cases that are nearly indefensible. Val estimates that when all is said and done, due to how the current state law figures into the Boy Scouts of America settlement formula, he will receive between 30% and 40% of what he initially was entitled to as a claimant on the Boy Scouts of America settlement case. It's a number, he says, is nothing compared to what he has lost.
You are listening to the Dubuque Telegraph Herald on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. Your reader is Jackie
and Barbara.
If you have any comments on this or any IRIS program, please call 243-6833 or toll free at 877-404-4747. And don't forget, this and many other IRIS programs are available from our website at iowaradioreading.org. Now we return to the Telegraph Herald. And here are today's obituaries. Betty D. M. Huseman. Betty Darlene Mary Huseman, 84, of Dubuque, Iowa, passed away surrounded by her family on March 5th at 9:50 a.m. at Mercy Hospital. Betty was born on July 21, 1939, in Dubuque, Iowa, to Magdalene and Frank Boole on February 24, 1962. Betty married the love of her life, John William Huseman, at Holy Trinity Church in Dubuque, Iowa. She attended Immaculate Conception Academy in Dubuque, Iowa. Throughout her life, Betty worked as a medical transcriptionist at Xavier, Finley, and Mercy Hospital for 67 years in tri-state family practice. Betty Huseman was a woman of boundless love and unwavering compassion, leaving behind a legacy of selflessness, humility, joy, and generosity. She found lifelong love at Point Roller Rink, rolling away together in a pink Cadillac. Their relationship would lead to a beautiful, lifelong marriage of 62 years. Betty's zest for life was palpable in her love for roller skating, bicycling, and the serene beauty of the Mississippi River and the Midwest landscapes. She thrived on the thrill of traveling, gambling, the vibrant energy of New Orleans Mardi Gras, and cheering on the Chicago Cubs. Her favorite holiday, Halloween, was a testament to her playful spirit and love of fun, reveling in the joy of others. Amidst her adventures, Betty prioritized being the devoted caretaker of her family, always putting their needs before her own. Betty's heart overflowed with love for her family, her joy evident at every gathering and celebration. She never missed an opportunity to show her care, remembering every birthday, anniversary, and special accomplishment with cards signed in her unique way, everyone knowing it was from her before they even opened it. Betty always had an open ear, genuinely caring and listening to every word spoken. She enjoyed the simple pleasures of home, finding comfort in reading the newspaper, watching games on television, and admiring the changing of the seasons during leaf look, with adventures with loved ones. She cherished her furry companions, Snuggles and Snickers, adorning her home with cat imagery and clothing. As a beloved collector, archivist, and storyteller, Betty's home was covered with cherished, meaningful mementos, usually in the form of laminated newspaper clippings and meticulously crafted photo albums. Betty leaves behind a legacy of family values, recipes, and traditions, whether it be her famous spaghetti and sloppy joes, or gathering at Eagle Point Park for family celebrations. She greeted everyone with equality, kindness, and love, earning her the affectionate nickname Grandma Cheeto for the snacks always found in her kitchen. Betty Huseman's legacy will forever live on in the hearts of those she touched. As we bid farewell to this extraordinary woman, may we carry forward her spirit with every act of love, humility, generosity, and compassion towards one another. Betty is survived by her devoted husband, John William Huseman, her children, Jeffrey, Mark, Heidi, Christopher, and son-in-laws. She will be lovingly remembered by her grandchildren and great-grandchildren. Betty was preceded in death by her brothers, Frank Boole and Carl Boole, grandson Chad Huseman, and sister-in-law Barbie Jaeger, Joanne Moss, and Mary Lou Huseman. The family would like to extend their heartfelt gratitude to the medical nurses, doctors, and surgeon Garrett F. Mortensen at Mercy Hospital for the exceptional care and support. Private arrangements will be held for family members to honor Betty's memory.
Paul S. Olds. Paul Stephen Olds, at the age of 74, passed away peacefully with open arms to meet up with his wife, Georgia, on Tuesday, February 27th, in Dubuque, Iowa. A memorial mass for Paul and his wife, Georgia, who passed on April 16, 2018, will be at 11 a.m. on March 12th at St. Anthony's Catholic Church with Father Stephen Rozanki officiating. Family and friends may visit after 9 a.m. at the church until the time of Mass. Burial will follow at Mount Calvary Cemetery with military honors accorded by American Legion Post No. 6 for Paul. Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory is assisting the family. Paul was born January 22, 1950, the son of Larry and Esther Olds in Dubuque. Paul met the love of his life, Georgia Bennett, at Dubuque Senior when he was 17. They married at Sacred Heart Church, Dubuque, Iowa, on September 5, 1970. They were to share and celebrate over 47 years of marriage together until Georgia's passing on April 16, 2016, at home in Dubuque, Iowa, with Paul by her side. Paul graduated from Dubuque Senior High School and joined the Navy on September 10, 1969, as aviation structural mechanic. Over the next 21 years, was stationed with his loving wife in Patuxent River, Maryland. Guantanamo Bay Naval Base, Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, Jacksonville, Florida, Norfolk, Virginia, aboard the USS Eisenhower, CVN 69, and Rantoul, Illinois, and eventually moved back to Dubuque after he returned from the Navy at the prestigious rank of Senior Chief Petty Officer in 1991. Paul received his Associate of Science degree and was awarded the Navy Commendation Medal, 3 Navy Achievement Medals, 5 Good Conduct Medals, and 2 National Defense Medals. He also qualified as a naval air crewman on the Navy Master Training Specialist and Air Force Master Instructor. Paul was an amazing man to know and be friends with. He was a needed father to some and a mentor to others. He loved to make people smile and to talk with them about his many adventures with Georgia through the Navy, and especially on their 24 cruises they took exploring the world. Reaching 5 continents. He had just returned from his first cruise with both his sons just before he passed. He had many hobbies, and everyone knew him for his craftsmanship with stained glass. If you touched his heart in any way, then you have something special he made you, hanging in a window or on a wall, to fill your heart with joy and love. He also proudly made the stained glass the Navy seal that is on permanent loan to the Navy Recruit Training Command and is displayed at Battle Stations 21, where every sailor in the Navy since 2016 has recited the Sailor's Creed in front of. Paul will always live in our hearts for being the best of men. Paul, we have the watch. He is survived by his 2 sons, Anthony of Cedar Rapids and Jonathan. 3 grandchildren, siblings, and many cousins, nieces and nephews, and friends. Preceded in death by his parents, Lawrence and Esther Olds, his wife, Georgia Olds, and his sister, Phyllis Sullivan. In lieu of flowers, a Paul Olds Memorial Fund will be established.
Janice O. Welp, East Dubuque, Illinois. Janice O. Welp of East Dubuque, Illinois, formerly of Dickeyville and Schulzburg, Wisconsin, passed away on Thursday, March 7th at Alvia Living Center in East Dubuque. Funeral was held earlier today. Janice was born on February 8, 1940, near Schulzburg, Wisconsin, the daughter of George and Clara Weiskircher Scott. She was a graduate of Schulzburg High School, the class of 1959. Janice was united in marriage to Thomas J. Welp on July 31, 1965, at St. Matthew Catholic Church in Schulzburg. He preceded her in death on August 19, 2019. She was formerly employed at the Schulzberg High School Dubuque Greyhound Park and, together with Tom, established and operated the 19th hole in East Dubuque. Janice enjoyed bowling and bus trips to the various casinos. Janice was an avid sports fan. She loved cheering on all of her favorite teams, ranging from all local high school sports teams, the Green Bay Packers, the Chicago Cubs, and any team who played the Chicago Bears. She was a fiercely protective mother, grandma, aunt, and friend. She loved to laugh, play cards, and talk on the phone to all her family and friends. She enjoyed being a grandma and was especially thrilled to be a great-grandma. She submerged herself in all her grandchildren's activities, attending whenever it was possible. She was always there, interested in how everyone else was doing and never wanted to talk about herself. Mom could talk to anyone and attempted to befriend everyone she met. Surviving our three children, Brett, Kevin, and Susan Hopman of Green Bay, a daughter-in-law, Ann, of East Dubuque, a son-in-law, Shannon Hopman, five grandchildren, a great-grandson, she was preceded in death by her parents, husband Tom, a son Dan Welp, five sisters Betty, Dolores, Kathleen, Joyce, and Shirley, and a brother Elmer Scott. The family would like to thank the staff at Alva Living Center, especially Ann May, for providing Janice with exceptional care and making her feel loved each day. We would also like to thank her daughter-in-law, Anne, for always helping Mom with anything she needed, with a smile and kindness for which Janice was extremely grateful. Online condolences may be left for the family at www.millerfhead.com.
Daniel M. Didish. Daniel Dan Didish, 64, of Menominee, Illinois, passed away on Sunday, March 3rd at Mercy One Dubuque Medical Center after suffering a heart attack. There will be no public visitation. A celebration of life will be held at a future date to be announced. The Miller Funeral Home of East Dubuque is serving the family. Dan was born on June 22, 1959, in Dubuque, the son of Robert and Juliana Kramer Didish. He was a graduate of Dubuque Senior High School, the class of 1977. Dan was united in marriage to Deb Schneider on May 27, 1983, at Nativity BVM Church in Menominee. He was formerly employed at Honeywell Manufacturing in Galena. Dan was a member of Nativity BVM Parish. Dan loved golfing, watching his grandkids play sports, and spending time with family and friends. Dedicated many of his younger years coaching Little League baseball and enjoying every minute watching his own boys playing every sport possible. Surviving is his wife Deb, three sons, Eric Didish and Stephanie, and their children, Drake, Declan, and Delcy of Dakota, Illinois, Scott Didish, and children Courtney and Kylie of Menominee, and Brian Lara Temperley Didesh of Freeport. His brother Robert Deb Didesh of Asbury, Iowa, and sister Molly Dennis Belcher of Dubuque. Nieces and nephews. His brother-in-law of Jim Schneider of Menominee, and John and Emily Schneider of Hazel Green, Wisconsin. His sisters-in-law Anne, Nick Herbst of Mapleton, Illinois, Joan and Bill Rundy of Cuba City, Wisconsin, Bev and Tim Faber of Marion, Iowa, and Lisa and Brian Bowman of East Dubuque, Illinois. Deb and family wish to express sincere thanks to members of the Galena Area Ambulance, East Dubuque Ambulance, Menominee Dunlaith Fire Department, Mercy One Cath Lab, and Mercy One ICU for the wonderful care provided to Dan and his family. He was preceded in death by his parents and father-in-law and mother-in-law, Jack and Jean Schneider. Online condolences may be left for the family at www.miller.com.
Winston W. Negus. Winston William Negus, 2 months old, of Dubuque, Iowa, passed away on Wednesday, March 6th at 6:40 a.m. at the University of Iowa Hospital and Clinics. Friends and family may visit from 4 to 7 p.m. on Thursday, March 14th at Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory in Dubuque. A funeral mass will be held at 10:30 a.m. on Friday, March 15th at St. Joseph Catholic Church, Key West. Burial will be at Mount Olivet Ceremony. Winston was born on Wednesday, January 10th, 2024, at 2:40 p.m. at UIHC, the son of Samantha Schuster and Isaiah Negus. He is survived by his parents, Samantha and Isaiah, his brother Lawson, grandparents Tim and Susan Schuster, William and Trish Negus, and Nicole and Dalen Daniels, aunts and uncles, Tiffany, Jordan, Desiree, Beng, Megan Daniels, Dylan Daniels, cousins Ellie, Evie, and Owen. Winston is preceded in death by his great-grandparents, Leonard Schuster, Freddie and Kathy Taylor, William Negus, and Jerry Daniels, cousins Heather Newroth and Weston Newroth. We knew from the beginning Winston was going to have a long stay in the NICU. At 20 weeks pregnant, we found out Winston had RCDH. He had a 50-50 chance of survival after birth. He was a warrior for the 55 days and fought so hard. We love you, baby boy. We would like to thank our family and friends for the endless prayers and all the doctors, nurses, and staff, and University of Iowa Stead Family Children's Hospital.
Thomas R. Anthony. Thomas R. Anthony, 65, of Greeley, Iowa, passed away March 1st at Mercy One in Waterloo. A visitation will be held from 10 to 11 a.m. on Saturday, March 16th at Tri-State Community Church, 12937 Derby Grange Road, Dubuque, Iowa, with a memorial service at 11 a.m. Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory is assisting the family. Tom was born November 26, 1958, at Dubuque's Xavier Hospital to Donald J. and Ruth A. Tegeler Anthony. He graduated from Hempstead High School. He held various jobs throughout his career. Tom loved little children and sought to protect them. He was very kind, and he was a very kind and generous man, and he strived to bring people to Christ. He is survived by his siblings, Gerald of Prairie du Chien, Janet of Dubuque, John of Cheryl, and Jeff Hank Anthony of Dubuque, nieces and nephews, Don Hintzman, Mike Hirsch, Brad Anthony, Ben Bernigan, Becky Schuler, and several great nieces and nephews. Tom is preceded in death by his mother and father. The family would like to express a special thank you for all the love, prayers, and support during this difficult time.
Evelyn M. Mueller Lenz, Lamont, Iowa. Evelyn M. Mueller Lenz, 92, of Lamont, Iowa, passed away Thursday, March 7th, at Mill Valley Care Center in Bellevue. Visitation will be held Monday, March 11th, from 9 until 11:30 a.m. at St. Joseph Key West in Dubuque. A massive Christian burial will follow at 11:30 with Reverend Monsignor Thomas Toll officiating. A private burial will be held at Holy Rosary Cemetery in Lamont, Iowa. Leonard Funeral and Crematory, Dubuque, Iowa, is assisting the family. Evelyn was a very caring and loving person with strong faith and unconditional love for her family. She was born on August 9, 1931 in Lamont to Joseph and Helena Herrig. She married Anthony Charlie Mueller on August 9, 1951 at Holy Rosary Church in Lamont. He passed away on April 30, 1987. Evelyn married Melvin Lenz on May 19, 1990, at Holy Rosary Church in Lamont. He preceded her in death on February 3, 2020. Evelyn was active in her church and enjoyed singing in the choir, being a Eucharistic minister, and supporting Holy Rosary alumni events. She is survived by Evelyn and Charlie's children, Elaine Newbert, Ron Mueller, Roger Mueller, John Mueller, and Mark Mueller, 11 grandchildren and 14 great-grandchildren. She is also survived by Melvin's children, Dale Lenz, Dee Schilling, Dennis Lenz, Diane Brem, and David Lenz, 16 grandchildren, and 31 great-grandchildren. Evelyn was preceded in death by her parents, her siblings Helena Herrig, Marvin Herrig, Isidore Herrig, Lucille Noonan, Robert Herrig, Marilyn Pete Herrig, and her son-in-law, Gary Newbert. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to Hospice of Jackson County. The family would like to extend a heartfelt thank you to the staff of Mill Valley Care Center, Hospice of Jackson County, and Dr. Brian Sullivan for their loving care.
Donald Digman. Donald Digman, 88, of Hopkinton, died Wednesday, March 6th at Good Neighbor Home, Manchester. Mass of Christian burial will be held at 10 o'clock Tuesday morning, March 12th, at St. Luke Catholic Church, Hopkinton, with interment at the Hopkinton Cemetery. Friends may call from 4 until 7 Monday at the church, and again on Tuesday from 9 until 10. A vigil service will be held at 4 o'clock on Monday to start the visitation. Getch Funeral Home has taken Donald and his family into their care. Thoughts, memories, and condolences may be left at GetchOnline.com.
That brings us to the end of today's reading of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald for March 11th. I'm your reader, Jackie.
And I'm Barbara.
Support for this reading comes from the DuPaco R.W. Heffer Foundation. The Telegraph Herald can be heard each weekday at 2 p.m. All programs heard on IRIS are intended solely for the blind and print handicapped. If you have any questions or comments on this or any IRIS program, please call our office toll-free at 877-404-4747. Thank you for listening.